But you ran for president too.
Oh, yes.
You became a candidate in 1980. Barry Commoner, mm-hmm. a well-known environmentalist, would run as president and you as vice president on the Citizens Party ticket. Weren't you really trying to start a third party?
A third party,
yeah.
A
little bit about that.
Well, people were getting disenchanted with Democrats and Republicans. So Barry Commoner, who was a professor, had all these wonderful ideas about the environment. They asked me to come to the Citizens Party convention. And I went with Charlie Loha, who was an Osage lawyer in Washington, an Oklahoma lawyer. We went to the convention, and they wanted me to run for vice president with Barry Commoner. And I said, oh, no, I have to talk to Fred. So Fred said, well, you have to do it. I said, yes, but you will fuss about me going because we weren't separated all that much. And I said, I'll be away a lot. And he said, oh, no, no, you wouldn't forgive me if I said no. So I had the kids talk to him to make sure they're really saying yes. And it was awful. It was like getting out of bed and trying to run with somebody tied your shoestrings together. Him and my associate, who's running Americans for Indian Opportunity, both of them resented that I did it. I don't know why it was. And it was awful to have that on the back. And of course, we were already then public and was traveling around.
They resented that you were running.
Because of my relationship with both of them.
Yeah.
I was doing something outside of them. And OIO and AIO, Fred was always involved in it enough that he felt comfortable with what all we were doing. And this was something outside of our relationship. So that kind of led to a long story, but he didn't take it very well, but we did reasonably well. I've forgotten what the percentage was, but then there were two other parties trying to start a third party too. So we kind of were going for the same vote, and it's almost impossible because every state has a different methodology to start a third party. The cost and the organization that you need, it's almost impossible to do.
When Fred lost in the primary of 76, you left Washington, you moved to New Mexico. You felt comfortable there, and Fred taught at the University mm-hmm. of New Mexico. You'd become that candidate. But then your interests were different. Fred wanted to can tomatoes, I guess.
Yes, raise chickens.
And raise chickens in New Mexico. But you wanted to go back to Washington. That's what caused the tension and ultimately the breakdown of the marriage. Mm-hmm. True?
Yes. Well, that campaign taught me two things. I was having trouble with the campaign, and I told my daughter Catherine and my coworker at OIO to come and say, what's wrong with this? Something's not quite right of how they're using me. They're not using me well. After they sat for a while, I said, well, what do y'all think? I feel kind of excluded from some of the decision-making. I said, they're treating me like a president's wife. And they said, well, you're acting like it. So that's when I got more aggressive in the campaign. Then the next thing was we had organized the Council of Energy Resource Tribe. And I was traveling around the country talking to the tribes about what they could do and having these seminars about how to get control of their own natural resources. And we set up the council. Out of that activity, we set up the Council of Energy Resource Tribe. And we got the federal government all changed around to be involved in it. And the tribes' right to negotiate their own deals because we found out they were the worst with the federal government negotiating for us. We were the worst contracts in the world, not just in the United States, but in the world. So we got some learned people from a couple of universities and had these forums to educate the tribes. And the tribe, it was hard for them to say, we can't do that. The Bureau won't let us. I said, y'all are the owners of this. You can do what you want to do. You can even say, get the heck out of here, BIA. But you may need them because the BIA were not that sophisticated anyway. It wasn't that they were, I don't think, hopefully, trying to cheat the tribes, but they were not sophisticated. Here comes the international corporation with 10 lawyers, and they just browbeat these guys into anything and then give them front money, which was to the tribal people that had to make the decision, along with the Bureau's recommendation. It's just wonderful what you see happening with the tribes now. The Utes was one of our main tribes. Now they've got a hotel in the middle of Denver. Everybody used what we taught. It lived for about 10 years, and then everybody learned how to manage their own affairs, and they didn't need counsel anymore. Peter McDonald was in charge of it when he was in his heyday. He was the chair of it. Oh, it worked out beautifully so that lots of wonderful things happened, and they all renegotiated their agreements with these companies. And we did timber tribes. We brought specialists in because the timber companies are just coming and clear cutting, and they weren't reforesting, particularly in the Northwest. So we did a whole bunch of things, and then all of a sudden you saw the environment. What are you going to do for the environment? We didn't have any protection. We did the federal government. So I worked with, she became my dearest friend, still is. She was second in command of EPA. So went to her and she said, I'll just make administrative decision. Tribes can create their own environmental standards. So the tribes have higher environmental standards than the state or city that they're close to. So that has worked out. That was happening. We were successful. Everything was going well. So I wasn't paying attention. And I knew in my head that when he stepped down from all of that adoration of Senate, there were going to be trouble. And I was watching for it. And then I just, before all of this, the head of the Energy Department, because that was one of the departments we were changing their attitude and their relationship with the tribe, he asked me to come to Washington and be the tribal. And Fred just kind of blew up, and he hurt my feelings so bad I ran away from home. He said, he said that it's only because he was interested in me physically. And I said, all this time you've complimented me on how.
Yeah.
So anyway, I ran away from home for about a day and came back, and it was just kind of that tension. And I know it was that he was going to be hard. He was building a garden. He had bought a calf, and we had to go to court over it, and the pig, and we had chickens and a duck. And we had this beautiful place on the Rio Grande River, Bosque.
But that was tough to go through that divorce. But you went to Washington, and for 10 years, to bring it around to present day, you and Fred have a good relationship today.
Yes.
And with his wife, Margaret.
Yes.
And you have a grandchild.
Yes, great-grandchild.
Great-grandchild brings everybody together.
Yes.
So the two of you can reminisce about old times, and it's a whole big family that
wonderful.
Gets together.
Yes. It's just a wonderful relationship now. Because it was so good and rich throughout our lives, I guess I didn't need him as much.
Yeah.
I found my own voice, because he was my voice.
Yeah.
And because of my dyslexia, that's part of my thing. I have to get to know people, and I can't read a speech, for one thing.
Yeah.
So he was my voice, and I gradually got independent of it, I guess.
Yeah, you grew. And you must be a great example to women who listen to your story, that they may be at one time been shy and retiring, but they found their voice, maybe by listening to you,